What is obvious to me is that your father should have left you to rot in that Breen prison camp. But he didn't. He took pity on you. And it's your duty to repay him. Now come with me.
Let her go.
And if I don't, what happens then?
I was hoping you'd ask.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, looking the view screen straight ahead and saying, fire.
Well, we're here mourning the lack of new Discovery episodes, so what we're doing is diving back into sort of our classic format. This week, we're going to tackle, for this week's conundrum... Star Trek's most badass characters.
This is a bit of a sequel of sorts because we did Star Trek's most badass moments.
Yeah.
Which I think there's kind of a big difference between like a character who's just badass and then like moments that I think were badass in Star Trek. Because I think a lot of those moments we talked about, well, as a character may not necessarily apply week to week. I think, let's be honest, maybe Kes in Warlord had some badass moments in there.
Sure.
I would not define Kes as a badass character. Spoiler alert for the rest of the episode.
Well, we'll see what's on
list. Okay. I don't want to spoil anything. But Cam, I think, first of all, we kind of did this. I forget exactly how, but for badass moments, we, first of all, wanted to define what it means to be badass.
Yeah.
So I pulled up the Urban Dictionary.
My go-to source for any definitions.
Yeah. Well, I want to know what the youngins are talking like these days.
What's the word on the street, Pops?
Well, they have the unspoken rules of being badass.
Okay.
First rule of being badass. A badass does not talk about being badass.
Oh, okay.
So does that apply?
Well, Ben Yong's excluded from this.
there's other little, like, ways of defining it. I want to know what you maybe define it. Or is maybe there a quintessential character in pop culture, not Star Trek, but just overall pop culture that you're like, oh, that person's badass.
I mean, I think you can point to a few different characters. And they aren't necessarily similar, but you can look at characters like, say, Batman, Han Solo,
Ellen Ripley,
great one, yeah, Wolverine. I think what it is these characters are, you know, they are very confident in action, and they never feel inconsistent. Like, you always kind of know that they have that sort of assured quality to themselves. They're cool because they kind of don't care. But they're also not characters who are going to look ridiculous or are going to kind of lose face in a situation.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this was a real struggle with Star Trek because, you know, because there's such a massive amount of episodes, some of these characters who maybe immediately jump to your mind is like, oh, they're a badass. There's like a lot of episodes where they look goofball or kind of ineffectual or just... You're kind of rolling your eyes at, you know, what they're doing that week. And then that kind of factors into how you look at them as a badass.
I'm totally on the same page as you. Can I be honest? There's maybe one series in particular that stands out where there's a little bit of a dearth of badassery.
Yeah.
But why don't we just jump into it? Do we want to do it in chronological order, start with, say, the original series?
We could. It doesn't really matter to me.
Okay, let's do that. Okay. Cameron, let's start with you. Is there a badass character that you think is kind of quintessentially badass?
Well, I had the Gorn.
Okay.
We're going to jump right to the Gorn, I guess.
Okay, so...
And I'll tell you why. Because the Gorn has that mystique to him. He's kind of like got the Boba Fett quality. He's someone who you instantly think is cool upon sight, and he holds true to it through the end. He can't be beaten. He's getting pummeled with rocks. And I love how he's like trolling Kirk over the communicator. But there's never a moment where the Gorn comes across as like silly... Or like,
Whoa. Never a moment where the Gorn comes across silly.
In terms of character, no. I don't think there is. You can argue about, well, the costume doesn't look like 2017 technology, but that's more of a, it's not the character himself. That's looking at the technology present in 1960s TV.
Why don't I go to the dictionary.com definition of badass? Yeah. It says a tough, uncompromising, or intimidating person.
Yeah.
Okay, so you find that with the Gorn. You know, okay, so I'll jump over to my next one because it's kind of attached here. I went to Captain Kirk because guess what? It was that Gorn moment that he literally lands on a planet, cannot overpower this guy physically.
Yeah.
Kirk builds an effing cannon.
Like, yeah.
That's something that's badass, right?
And the Gorn is a badass because that's what it takes to stop him.
Yeah.
Is a cannon.
Okay, okay. I get that. Any other characters that I think
I want to talk about Kirk because I had real issues with Kirk in that Kirk has so many amazing moments. I didn't necessarily think of Arena first. I was thinking of like Balance of Terror.
Okay.
I was thinking of Corbomite Maneuver. You can go to some of the movies, Wrath of Khan, where he's so great. What really hurt me with Kirk was the number of episodes where he comes across as very campy or silly. Like
especially if you're in maybe season 3, for example.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like Requiem for Methuselah, where he's like tossing himself around on the ground like a fish, begging like this robot woman to love him, or Obsession, where he's just like grown obsessed with a cloud monster. And you know, it's just Kirk is someone who goes the whims of what the writers felt like doing. Like, is Kirk a badass in a piece of the action? Or is he just kind of like a hammy kind of nut bar?
Yeah. But do you think if you're, say, an ensign and he's your captain, would you be going to your academy reunion and say, yeah, I serve under a badass? I think you might.
Probably.
Okay.
I guess. But that's where I fell into issues with Kirk because...
No. This is not an ensign who is on the Plato's stepchildren away mission.
I didn't even think about that.
Got to watch him be a horsey.
You know, like Han Solo doesn't really have these like Captain Kirk moments. And
that's
true. You think of like Star Trek Generations are like, Kirk is one of the greatest ever. And he's chopping woods in a cabin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's not out there like, I just want to soar the stars. He's like, hey, I got to make breakfast. You want some eggs?
Well, okay. Well, I referenced this moment in the most recent blog that we did for Star Trek Discovery when we're talking about badassery on that show. And one of the moments that I pointed to is when in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, they figure out where the cloaked Klingon ship is.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see Shatner. He's just soaking it all
up.
And
he
clenches his fist and goes fire. And so that's an example of a badass moment.
Yes.
Does that necessarily mean that overall throughout the entire continuity of James T. Kirk, he is a badass?
And that's the question mark for me that I couldn't quite... I was very unconfident in naming him a badass character. He's definitely prone to badass moments.
Okay.
But then I wonder, is he too kind of... does Starfleet support badasses?
That's going to be the debate that we can have throughout this episode, Cam.
Because that's a lot of thing with Starfleet is it's kind of this very upright, you know, moral kind of go, you know, teammates kind of society. And Kirk is, you know, like a total Starfleet top tier guy.
Okay.
I mean, the J.J. Abrams movies obviously make him a little more unpolished and a little more reckless. I don't think he's that much of a badass there either.
Not when he's eating apples and making pew-pew-pew finger guns.
Yeah.
You know?
It feels like they want him to be a badass in those movies, which feels a little
Star Trek Into Darkness really made my skin crawl with him, like, hissing at, like, cadets walking by. And, I was just like,
Yeah.
Okay. But okay, so Cam, you're on the fence.
Yeah.
I threw my vote behind it. Do you want to, have I swayed you enough with just talking with a few of the moments, or should we just go to rock, scissors, paper?
I wanted to say, you know, with Captain Kirk, because I struggled with Kirk.
Yeah.
And I began to wonder, is the real badass of the original series Spock?
I think that that's somebody who I had a question mark next to, because if we go by the dictionary.com definition, you know, an uncompromising, intimidating individual. I think there's a lot of people that would find those qualities in one Mr. Spock.
And Spock is like the closer. You know, in a tense situation, they often turn to him and he's the one who gets things done. You know, he's the one who drops the nerve pinch and just drops an enemy or something like that. Or, you know, you see, you know, episodes like where he's on the bridge because Kirk's incapacitated or whatever. Spock is totally in charge and you believe in him. And he never feels like a character who is given the elastic personality of Kirk unless there's a reason, like when he's, you know, infected by spores in this side of paradise.
Well, would you agree that he's made to look silly far less often than one Captain Kirk is.
I would say that,
so yeah. There's more consistency with that character.
Yes.
And look, he's just got some pretty cool moments throughout that.
He's got lots. Yeah.
Every time he does that Vulcan nerve pinch, or mm-hmm. I just think, and this is a good Kirk example, but the whole Amok time battle.
Yeah.
I mean, I would just call that like badass as well.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
So, and that goes for both characters. So, okay, so the jury's out on Kirk.
It's tough because, I mean, Kirk probably has maybe the most badass moments of any character we may name on this podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just that he also probably has, well, I guess the TNG cast has more hours dedicated to them, but Kirk has just such a weird variety of episodes dedicated to him.
I know.
And I guess he was the star of almost every episode, too. Okay. So, yeah.
So I'll throw one more name out there with regards to the original series. I go back and forth on this one, but I guess I'm sold by the films. But Khan Noonien Singh there, because in Space Seed, I would not necessarily call him badass. That falls sometimes more to the campiness of it, but I just think about him like stuffing like these like worm things into people's ear. What are they called again? I'm blanking on the name.
Oh my god.
I know, for the podcast host we look really bad right now, but
Alfie's set of eels.
The eels, and stuffing them down like Chekhov's and Captain Terrell's like ears. It just like, that's scary, that's uncompromising, that's kind of the definition of the badass sort of moments there. And just his whole end, he went out thinking that he defeated Kirk.
Yes.
So he kind of, in his own mind, maybe that's all that really matters. Like, he's the winner there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely put Khan in that category.
Yeah, I mean, I think Khan, I don't know, can you be a badass if you're insane? And that's a question that I'll be coming back to later in this episode, but that was the one thing that didn't cause me to write Khan down, in that he's deranged and unstable. Which to me then calls into question, is he really in the best faculties behind most of these decisions?
Yeah. Well, I definitely would not put Garth of Izar.
No, he's not on my list either.
Badass. Especially that Kirk moment that he threw the temper tantrum. Yeah. Does that go in the category of why Kirk can't just be cool, or do we give him a pass because he was it was kind of the Garth of Izar moment?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, it's unfortunate that none of the other crew members on the ship really apply.
I don't think we're going to touch upon the Kelvinverse movies too much, but I think the one person you could maybe say is maybe Uhura from the films.
Definitely, yeah.
So, but beyond that, I don't know if we need to really dive too far into the Kelvinverse.
Chekhov is kind of treated embarrassingly in the original series a lot of the time, so he doesn't really apply, and Scotty goes up and down like nobody's business.
I don't think any other characters would even have a chance.
It's too bad.
Yeah. But why don't we mosey on over to when Star Trek The Next Generation, Cam? Because this is one where I struggled with, and ultimately, I'm going to make an argument here.
Okay.
I don't think in the main cast, you're going to find a character that you could just say, that is badass. That's a badass character. They definitely have their moments. I think of Data in Brothers, where he's able to take over the ship like a total pro.
Mm-hmm.
But would you call Data a badass?
No.
Yeah, but and you know,
I mean, you can look at an episode, say like Descent, where he's something like really tough or whatever, and go like, man, Data's badass in that moment. But episode to episode, are you going, man, that Data is so cool? He's often played as for comedic relief, which to me, if you're a real badass,
no,
you're not the comedic go-to character.
And I think Picard has a lot of moments. And
yeah.
They really try to make him a badass in the movies, at least the last three movies.
They tried, or Patrick Stewart tried. Well,
Patrick Stewart, he's got that associate producer credit. He can make them do deep close-ups of his ripped arms as much as they can. But I don't think Picard is a badass unless you're talking about how relative it is in the archaeology circles.
Well, you can also make the argument, though, that Picard is a better, maybe, candidate to be badass than Kirk, in the sense that, like, that character has a lot of consistency throughout his episodes.
He's not often made to look silly the way that Kirk was.
Right.
But I don't think Picard has anywhere near the number of badass moments, and I think from there you can't call Picard badass. That doesn't mean he's not a cool character. I think he's a very cool character. I don't think he's badass, though.
I think part of the reason is that there's that division with having the First Officer Riker going all the away missions, whereas the original series, like, Kirk did a lot of the action stuff as well.
Yeah.
when you get to the next generation, it's Riker down on the planets doing things, whereas Picard tends to be more dealing with the diplomatic aspects.
Well, let's talk about Riker, though, because this is a character that I struggled with, because we're supposed to think he is, I think.
Definitely, yeah.
But he's such a by-the-book guy. We've talked about this a lot on the podcast. And but, you know, I mean, Spock's a by-the-book kind of guy, but there's just something about Riker that seems a little too, I don't know, tongue-in-cheek. A lot of the times where he's a very serious officer, but would you call him a badass? Like, I think a badass is somebody who's like just kind of cracking his knuckles, doesn't even like flinch when he's playing that knife game that Bishop played in Aliens, you know?
Yeah.
I don't picture Riker as that typical badass.
Like, Riker's a guy who, you know, has so many awesome moments on the show, but when I look at him, I often think, like, there's a guy who's like, I really like networking. You know what I mean? Like, he's a guy who kind of has a bit of an insincerity to him. Whereas, like, I can totally buy him, you know, in rooms of admirals, kind of like glad handing. Yeah.
I don't know if insincerity would be the word that I would ever use, but I would say this. What about, like, a cool substitute teacher?
Oh, who puts his feet up on the desk?
And turns the chair around and sits, you know, backwards in the chair.
It's like, what up, kids?
Yeah, you know, I kind of picture Riker as like a cool dad sort of character.
And I think Riker, the reason that he becomes like, I think, a go-to badass character for a lot of people is the Best of Both Worlds two-parter with his big fire moment at the end of part one. I mean, that is the moment when I think badass Riker, that's what comes to mind.
That is a moment.
Yeah.
But then we also have him kind of, he's often played as the horn dog.
Right, yeah. And how many... You look in that Bynar episode with him like obsessing over Minuet in the holodeck, there ain't nothing badass about that.
Or him bringing the game onto the ship because he's getting a little freaky with that alien on Ryza.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind
of... And he's ridiculed a lot too on the show in a sense. Like, they kind of make him a bit of a figure of jokes. Like, you know, Q's always kind of making fun of him, and they just kind of make him look a little bit, I don't want to say lunkhead, but the show seems to kind of point him out a little more than the others.
Yeah.
Him and Worf.
Well, let's talk about Worf, though, because maybe
on
we
TNG?
Can, well, okay, maybe why don't we save the bulk of what we have to say for Worf on our DS9 category?
Right.
TNG Worf, I don't think, is badass just because he gets his butt kicked so many of the times. And he's played as kind of a dumb character.
Yeah.
And I don't think he can be a total badass if you're kind of a micro brain, as Q like to call him.
A real badass doesn't have a 10-minute YouTube video of you being shut down.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
So I agree. Worf, TNG, not so much.
Right.
Unfortunately, I just don't think... You know, I think
there's characters who should be. Tasha Yar should have been a badass character.
But what was she given? And that's kind of the problem, right?
Penalty boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The penalty box.
What do you think of Ensign Ro?
Oh, okay. She was actually on my list.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I have to say is, like, there's not as many moments for her that you can really point to.
Rascals.
Well, I know. Well, one moment I just thought was kind of good and kind of indication of how she is as a character is in the next phase, where they're trying to draw attention to 10 forward through the Romulan disruptor.
Yeah.
And she starts shooting Riker in the head, you know? It's just,
so there you go. They're making Riker always look kind of silly, right?
Yeah. Is that a badass moment? I mean, to me, it's one of like Ro's cool moments.
Yeah.
But is there, she's a very conflicted character. She's and it's a great performance.
Definitely.
And I just keep wondering if, she's wrong a lot of the times, though, and I think that's the other problem. Picard's there to mentor her and guide her along the right way, but how badass can you be if you're kind of on the wrong side of the argument so many times?
Yeah, and a lot of that is kind of underscoring her insecurities. Like, they make her kind of full of kind of piss and vinegar, but that's because she's also very insecure in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
and that's why I really had a question mark next to her on my list, because there's another character we'll get to soon, and Ro is kind of the proto version of this character.
Okay.
I think anyone can figure out who that is.
Yeah.
But Ro doesn't have the number of, like, she doesn't have sort of the catalog of moments. It's more like there's something magnetic about the persona where you go, that's a badass character. But when you sit and break it down on paper, Yeah, you're thinking of episodes like
The Next Phase.
The Next Phase, thank you. And Rascals. And like those are the ones that really jump out. And then like, you know, the episode like Ensign Row. And then her exit episode, which is kind of weak.
Yeah.
It's more like the character and Michelle Forbes are badass.
Yeah.
But the show doesn't run with it like they should have.
I agree with that. If we're talking about some, minor characters here, definitely the outrageous Okona.
On my list as well.
Yeah, good. We don't need to discuss it further.
You know, at the start of the episode when I said Han Solo, I should have said Okona.
Yeah. Because... Nothing like a rat's tail to tell you how badass somebody is, right?
That's why I have one.
Okay. what about a character like Guinan? Would you call her badass?
I wouldn't call her badass. She's a great character.
She can
cool
fence.
Sure.
She can beat Worf at target practice.
She can shoot a phaser rifle.
Yeah. She hangs out with Samuel Clemens.
Well, and I think we need to then underscore, like, just because they're a great character, does that make them a badass character? I don't think Guinan jumps to mind as a badass character.
Cam, who do you think is the strongest candidate for a badass character on TNG? Because I really struggled. I went through the list of characters, and I just don't think it was meant to be a show populated by badasses.
What do you think of maybe Tasha Yar in Yesterday's Enterprise?
Alternate timeline Tasha Yar.
Because we know Sela's not.
In one episode, though.
Yes. It's more like there's little moments of characters.
I can't give it up then. Like, yeah. I just can't. And that's kind of the problem. The other one that I contemplated was Chief O'Brien, but again, I don't think, and we can get into it maybe in the next category here, but I don't think it enough of those moments, and I don't think you would watch TNG those first six seasons and say, Chief O'Brien is a badass.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And I even went through looking at other Klingon characters, because I'm like, well, Klingons have to have some badass characters. And even on TNG, there's not a lot of Klingons that really fit my profile for what I was looking for.
There's that L.A. Laker who was in, was it Gambit, I think?
Yeah.
He seemed kind of badass.
Sure. Okay. I mean, I like Gowron a lot, but I wouldn't call him a badass.
What do you think it was about Star Trek The Next Generation? Do you think it was just...
Do you think it was that the show sort of had more of a sort of stiff upper lip sort of sensibility than really any of the other series? And so that kind of goes against badasses who tend to be a little more uncouth or a little more, like, not as buttoned up.
I don't play by the rules.
Exactly, yeah. Like, who's the character on the show that you think plays by the rules the least? I mean, it's probably Worf.
Probably Worf.
But he's often played as kind of clumsy or bumbling or what have you.
Yeah. It's definitely not Wesley.
Nope.
Although, is Nick Locarno the best candidate for a badass character in Star Trek The Next Generation?
The thing is, he's not a badass. He's just kind of a jerk. Yeah. But, and that's the issue with TNG, is that the characters are written with a certain rigidity that the other shows aren't.
Because even a character like Q, you could maybe make an argument, but to him, he's more of kind of the low-key character.
Yes. Yeah. So he's a prankster.
Yeah. Alrighty, why don't we move over to a series that I think probably has the most number of candidates possible, where almost the entire main cast. But why don't we just start off at the top? Let's start with the captain, one Ben Sisko. Do you qualify him as a badass?
I do, because Sisko has so many fantastic moments throughout the series. You know, like a Kirk, he has several moments. I mean, of course, there's the famous call to arms of him, you know, sitting on the ship. Moment that is just amazing.
Well, to me, it's that episode. It's not actually with him in the scene. It's when he leaves the baseball behind.
Right.
That, to me, is the
But then you cut Sisko to him in the ship.
Badass moment. Yeah. But that's how badass he is. He doesn't need to be on screen to tell you what a badass he is.
Yeah, and he doesn't have that inconsistency that Kirk has, which I really appreciate with Sisko. You know, there's moments like, there is a, you know, we talked about this when we did our episode on the Dominion War in the wrap-up episode, which I'm blanking on the name. Is it Favor of the Bold, or is it the next one?
Sacrifice of Angels.
Sacrifice of Angels, thank you. Where he's like flying into the wormhole to do something.
For some reason.
To kill all his people. Like, I don't know that I consider that badass. That's more reckless.
I would also say Fascination was not his best moment.
I think he gets a pass on that one.
Does
though.
He? Okay.
Yeah. Move Along Home, maybe more of a shot in the foot for him. But
hey, look, if you can have a captain that does a hopscotch,
right?
Why not?
Sure.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, Cisco is very consistent throughout, and we see a lot of growth, but we also see that he's someone who goes against what Starfleet wants, maybe more than any other captain.
And he gets away with it.
Yes, and the thing is, very few admirals are badasses, but Cisco becomes a badass because he always stands up for what he believes and goes against some of these admirals really strongly.
Well, let me ask you this, because I think maybe a moment that a lot of people would point to other than the call to arms moment is for the uniform, where he poisons the atmosphere of a McKee colony through torpedoes. And to me, I know why a lot of people would say, oh, that's a total Cisco's a badass moment, but that's not what I think it was meant to be. Because I think when you're describing somebody as a badass, you are championing that character and their decision. And I don't think I think the writers wanted to make that a very ambiguous, a very much gray, morally compromising decision that he made there.
Well, I mean,
I don't think that's actually meant to be a badass moment. It's more like, oh, I'm kind of frightened for the path this character's going down.
Right. Well, if you look at some of the characters I name at the top of this episode, you know, like Batman or Wolverine, they're kind of in the same, or even Han Solo, they're in that same place. They often occupy a gray territory.
Sure. Yeah.
And they're pulled to the good side, but you can see how they could be also, on the flip side, quite dangerous.
Well, let me say this, because if I'm looking at Han shooting first, I don't know if my first instinct is, oh, he's a badass because he kills people. It's more like, oh, this is a dangerous guy.
That's not the moment that makes him a badass. It's when he gets up and flips the coin.
Oh, okay.
That's what makes him a badass.
sure. Yeah, I get that. But like, but you get what I'm saying. Like,
yes.
You kind of think that sometimes audiences might misinterpret exactly what the writers are going for. And they'd write it off of like, oh yeah, he's a cool badass. And that's why there's maybe a lot of disagreement about In the Pale Moonlight about whether that does more damage to the character or not.
Right.
I wouldn't go through it and say, oh, that's a badass Cisco episode. It's like, oh, this is a journey of moral compromise on his part.
Right.
And, you know, it's not him being a badass because he says he can live with the consequences. It's more like, oh, I wonder what this means for his character. And it's a dark place, but it's one of the reasons why I like the character.
Yeah. And there's often a lot of ambiguity to these types of characters. And that's something, maybe that's part of the problem with TNG. There's not a lot of ambiguity to its characters, whereas DS9 is a show all about ambiguity.
So why don't we tackle the next big one on the list here? But you alluded to Major Kira.
Major Kira was my number one badass character for Deep Space Nine. Just because this is a character who's just has so much like strength and toughness in pretty much any situation. And you just see how this character goes through hell and always is able to just keep going. And just, you never get the sense that it's a character who's going to kind of shrink from a challenge, but is also very human, like very weirdly relatable for someone who I would never share similar experiences with.
And just think about all the moments of vulnerability that we see her in, which are quite numerous.
Yes.
And she's also very spiritually inclined sort of badass. So you're left going like, oh, this is not what you would typically think of as like kind of the quintessential Wolverine or Batman kind of character.
Although she also kind of has that ambiguity in terms of her, you know, obviously being a quote-unquote terrorist in her younger years.
Some people say freedom fighter, Cam.
Yeah, of course. And so there is that sort of shades of gray to her character.
That was the worst Riker episode. Why? That's not a badass character development there.
If you go to our YouTube channel, you can hear a commentary for that episode.
That's true, yeah.
Done by me. But what do you think of Kira? Because I referenced, you know, I said she has far more badass moments than like a Ro.
Yeah, and, you know, I definitely think that there's just so many different layers to her that makes it more, like, if she was just a superhuman.
Yes.
That was kind of like the T-1000 throughout every episode.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really consider that character to be a badass or just kind of programmed by the writers to be that way? I like the fact that we see a lot of the faults in her. But I just go, the moment that jumped out to me, though, is we have pregnant Major Kira essentially breaking free without any help from anybody else when she's imprisoned by the Cardassian who was a victim of one of her terrorist attacks back in the day. It's all done by her.
Right.
And it's just like, yes, this is a badass. This is somebody who takes her own fate into her own hands. And that's kind of why everybody like has that kind of confidence in her. And that's why we get behind her.
Yeah, that episode is definitely on my list,
that's
actually, in front of me.
The Darkness and the Light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought also one of her great badass moments was convincing that farmer to desert his...
Oh, in progress.
In progress, yeah.
One of the highlights of season one from Star Trek DS9.
Mullabok the Farmer. Yeah, no.
Is that going to be your cosplay next year at the convention?
No. I want to actually, though, reference... I'll
walk around with a pitchfork and some straw in your mouth.
You know, convince people to build little fire pits for me. No, I want to also draw attention to Call of Arms, too. Everyone obviously goes nuts over the baseball moment.
Yeah.
One of my favorite moments, though, is when Kira's putting, like, the self-destruct system or whatever, like, to fry all the circuitry in main control. And it's just, like, done in slow-mo of her, like, watching the explosions go off around her. And you're just like... Hell yes.
What's interesting, she had a very fascinating journey throughout that Dominion invasion arc, you know, and she even became complacent for like a period.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of culminates with her like forming another kind of resistance cell, which again, pretty badass. And one of our YouTube commenters had mentioned the fact that she gave Damar the old, this is Kimberly on YouTube, gave Damar the old double-fisted quintessential Starfleet punch after she just could not bear Damar anymore.
My one bummer with Kira is that imagine if this character was in a series now, how much more she would benefit from modern like fight blocking techniques.
Well, we just kind of saw what we can... do in modern television with Star Trek Discovery and Into the Forest I Go with the Burnham Cole showdown.
Like, you know that Kira would have had some fights like that.
Not so much the tumbling onto the ground and kicking people in the shins sort of stuff that we got back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's too bad. What could have been?
So, Cam, why don't we go over to probably the next big one here? What do you think of one Elam Garrick?
Oh, yeah.
Badass.
Garrick is at the, well, I said Kira was at the top of the list. She's at the top of the list for the main cast.
Okay.
Garrick is at the top of the list for the supporting because, I mean, Garrick is just, he has that mystique, that Boba Fett factor, and that you just know he's deadly. But he never really has to exercise it. You know, you'll see him occasionally shoot someone, but he's like a character who's, he's like dangerous because he's always still.
Like a crocodile.
Yes.
There you go.
And it's easy to hold his mouth closed.
I appreciate, like, just a few moments ago, I was saying that we sometimes need to be careful about how we define badassery because it could just be championing, like, very morally compromising moments.
Right.
It seems that's what the entire character of Garrick is based on, yet we still consider him to be badass.
Yeah.
But the moment for me that, and this is early on in this run of, relatively early on in the run of DS9, was Second Skin, where Garrick ends up on the planets helping to bring Kira back.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up vaporizing one of the guys that had given up. Was it Gamor, I think?
Yeah.
And so Garrick vaporizes the guy and says, pity, I rather liked him. And like, to me, like watching that as a kid, I was just like, oh, that guy's badass. It's
right.
Just, like, he just like doesn't give an F. It's kind of like, wow.
He has a little bit of that James Bond quality where he's like, you know that he's done horrible things. You know he can kill someone at any moment, but he's charming. He's kind of likable, and he just has that ability to kind of win over a crowd to a certain degree.
He likes his canard shaken, not stirred.
Yes, exactly.
So
exactly.
Hey, is there any like quintessential Garrick moment that really pops out to you, Cam, if you think kind of helps define this character as a badass?
I don't know that there's like a moment that really jumps out. It's more just how he holds himself up against characters like Gul Dukat, who are like really threatening. And you just see he never backs down, and he always just has that kind of like that wide-eyed kind of like look. Like, you know that if push came to shove, Garrick probably could kill them.
Well, like Kira, he is a survivor.
Yes.
You know.
He has like a confidence about him that is really, really cool.
Yeah. Okay. When we talk about DS9, I mean, there's a couple others that I want to throw to, but we've talked about, I think, the big three, the ones that everyone's waiting for. Anyone that you want to highlight at this point?
I want to know, this was another one that I had written down, and I kind of had a question mark, and that's Martok. Martok, I've often named as the most badass Klingon ever, and he might be, but Martok has a little bit of an issue in the sense we see he's played by Gowron a lot. You know, Gowron is like sending him on suicide missions because he's kind of jealous of him. Now, to Martok's credit, he survives those suicide missions, which makes him kind of a badass. But we see, he's in command in the episode Soldiers of the Empire. and the crew's gonna like mutiny on him because he's being too cautious, and then Worf challenges him and then lets him win.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not so badass.
He's
more like someone who wasn't a badass who grows into a badass.
So when I was compiling my list, I was going through DS9 characters, and I typed out Martok. I was just like, obviously Martok. And then I went to do research because I always want to show like kind of moments or like episode examples.
Right.
And I couldn't really find anything for Martok, which is funny because I agree with you. Like, I think he's one of the most fascinating Klingon characters. I think
he did choose the eye patch.
That's true. Yeah. Or not an eye patch, but just no eye.
Right, right. Yeah.
But like, he's one of those kind of characters that he has a lot of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
He has a lot of honor.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we ever really got to see him just be a total badass. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's,
no.
It's not what makes him a great character, though.
Right. And a lot of his moments are spoken of or just kind of offhand referenced. You know, it's like that he's this Dominion War champion. But we're not spending episodes, you know, following him.
Yes.
And so we just have to assume that he's out there really surviving all these incredible battles, kind of like, you know, Wedge from Rogue Squadron in Star Wars movies. We never really get to see Wedge do a lot, but he makes it through all three of those movies. Yeah. And like the legends of Wedge are, you know, he's held up as one of the great X-Wing pilots. I kind of feel the same way about Martok. We don't see a lot, but we know he's doing things.
Well, was Wedge in Rogue One? Was he?
No,
featured?
He wasn't. The actor was really bitter about Star Wars, and so
really?
He was, you know, they kind of he was going to be in Force Awakens, and he was like, "No, I don't like Star Wars."
Really?
Yeah.
But they put Porky guy. What's his name?
No, he
Porkster.
Didn't. Porkins? No, he died in A New Hope.
No, but I thought he was in Rogue One. Wasn't
no,
he?
No, it was it was two other characters.
Okay,
like, I think Gold Leader and Red Leader. I think. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, we digress.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe Martok doesn't belong on this list, but if we're talking about Klingons, we agree Worf doesn't really belong on the TNG list.
Right.
I still think that when we're introduced to Worf in season 4 of DS9, he gets essentially kind of a detective episode, you know, where he's investigating why the Klingons are so interested in coming aboard DS9 at this point.
Right.
Right out of the gate, he's smart for once.
Yeah.
We get to see him actually be badass. And I think, you're going to get to it if I don't. But that, when he's battling all the Jem'Hadar with Martok in Purgatory's Shadow, we always get the latter DS9 two-parters mixed up.
Yes, yeah. Is it part one or part two where that happens?
I think it's actually part two. So is that by Inferno's Light?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay,
yeah.
So by Inferno's Light, he's just got the arena of nonstop Jem'Hadar. I think he defeats 19 of them or
something like that.
Huge number.
Are you able to make sense in your mind of the arc of Worf going from Next Generation into Deep Space Nine? I often struggle with it because when I was looking at this list, I almost looked at them as two different characters because Worf on TNG is not Worf on Deep Space Nine.
I'll say this, like growing up, everybody thought Worf was cool.
Yeah.
And I watched Worf and I was so excited to have him on DS9. But going back and rewatching TNG later in life, I was just like, he's kind of a dope, but I never got the sense at the time that was a case. So,
like, I love him in a lot of the episodes, like Parallels, and he's, I mean, of course, a blast in Cupid, but he's not the character he's in Deep Space Nine, who's so, like, he's just, like, the character you would want to bring in to, like, in, like, a crisis, whereas I can't say I'd be wanting to call in Worf from TNG in a crisis.
But you know what? I bet, like in retrospect, but at the time, viewers were all over Worf,
right.
You know? So it was actually easy for me to make that transition going straight from loving the character on Next Gen and then seeing him have even more to do on DS9. I never really had problem rationalizing it until I kind of went back and was watching TNG. I'm just like, how did he get to this point? Like, was Picard holding him back this whole time? Like, what was it about this character?
Sisko just like let him loose.
Yeah. But you asked how I rationalize it. I think it had something to do with the ponytail because I think ponytailed Worf in season 6, Next Gen and onward, there's just something a little bit more badass about him.
Yeah.
Even if he's spying on women taking baths on Romulan penal colonies. That's he's getting real creepy there. That aside, it's something about the ponytail. You mentioned an episode like Parallels. That was really great.
Right.
You know,
Deep Space Nine really doubles down on the Klingon sort of aspects of Worf's character. And it somehow feels more badass on Deep Space Nine than it did in TNG. You know, you referenced Birthright. There's nothing cool about Birthright when he's teaching those
James
kids.
Cromwell.
When he's teaching kids to throw spears through hoops. Like, that's not cool.
No.
But then you get to Deep Space Nine where you're dealing with him and Martok. And more of his honor code, and suddenly it becomes like badass.
Yeah.
And I just, maybe it's just Ron Moore. Maybe Ron Moore was like really the reason.
I think he was kind of given a little bit more free rein.
Yeah. Like he was really able to emphasize why Klingons are badass in DS9 and he wasn't on TNG.
But Doran came in and said, okay, you guys want me back. You're going to pay me a pretty penny and I want this character to not be such a dope. Like yeah. Doran has said that in the past, like make him a far more interesting character. And I think Ron Moore is happy to do that. And mm-hmm. We ended up getting a badass version of Worf. Like, is it possible for a character to go from lame ass to badass throughout the course of a series?
Apparently it is.
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to skip ahead too far, but I mean, like, Cadet Tilly. By the end of Star Trek Discovery, could she be the most badass character on all of Star Trek?
I have my doubts.
Okay.
That seems like a bet that I'm not willing to make.
You don't think her nickname's going to be Commander Badass by the end of this?
No.
Okay. We'll see. But still on DS9, because I think there's actually even a few more characters.
I mean, let's talk about Jadzia, because Jadzia is a character who, with obviously, if she can go toe-to-toe with Klingons, she's pretty cool.
Well, the episode to me that really jumped out was Blood Oath.
Yeah.
You know, where she partners off with Kang,
Kolar,
and Koloth. Yeah. And and they go against the albino who... I don't know, maybe there's some Star Trek Discovery connection that we don't know yet. But to me, that's an episode I was just like, oh yeah, this character, she is kind of a legit sort of version of being a Klingon badass. And like, you can tell that these other old Klingon guys, they accept her for that. They realize that she's genuine there. And I think that's part of the thing about being a badass is you're not trying. You're not faking it. Like, you just are. And we always got that sense with Jadzia when it came to the Klingon culture.
Do you think Jadzia is the most self-assured character on that show?
Well, because we saw fewer moments of vulnerability with her than, say, with Kira, right?
Right.
I think part of that is, like, you've lived nine lives. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, I think you got to have kind of this self-confidence versus, I'm sorry, I like Ezri Dax, but you would not put her down as a badass, would you?
No.
Yeah. So, and even though she has, I guess, 10 lives at that point of life experience, part of it is just Jadzia herself.
Yeah. Well, she's got that spirit of adventure to her. Like, obviously, Jadzia herself was much more of an adventurous soul than Ezri was.
Although Ezri could use that pretty badass machine gun and just
she could
blow Vulcans away through the bulkheads, but
don't tell me that Jadzia wouldn't have been able to.
Oh, that's true. Okay. I don't know. Can we talk a little bit about Odo? Because he is not a badass to me, even though he's one of my favorite characters on Deep Space Nine, and I'm trying to think about why he doesn't quite qualify as the badass. Is it just his rigidity? Is it his
crippling insecurity?
Well, partially that, but one of the things about being a badass is kind of that self-assuredness that you spoke about, but also kind of going against the grain to a certain degree. And Odo's not somebody who necessarily would go against the grain. And when we see him do that, it's when he's infatuated with the female changeling.
Right.
And
he seems more under her power.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though I buy that's totally a legitimate feeling that he's having.
I think part of the problem is Odo is a character who strives for acceptance throughout the entirety of the series to belong to something. And I don't think if you look at most badass characters, they're that desperate to belong.
Yeah, I think part of it is out of a crew of outsiders, he was the most outsider, but not maybe through his own volition. Like, that's the whole thing about being a badass is you want to be on the outside.
Yeah.
Odo is just where he found himself, and he struggled with that, kind of his own identity issues. And I think that was kind of like, as much as I like the character, I would not describe him as a badass.
He doesn't have the adaptability that like Akira has.
Sure. Yeah. I guess like another one I need to bring up though is Chief O'Brien. And, that's, I chatted a little bit about him in TNG, but I think on DS9, you watch an episode like M'Pok Nor, where his whole position is, I'm just here to do a job, get out of here, get home alive. That is the very definition of being a badass.
It is, but to me, O'Brien is too much of an everyman to be a badass.
Really?
Yes, like he's portrayed as the everyman of the series. And he's, that's why they torture him so much. And so
he survives. Is that not badass, Cam?
To me, he falls under more of, say, when you're talking about like a Kirk or a Riker or what have you, where he's a character that is, you know, he's a great character, but he's given badass moments, but is he a badass day in, day out? I don't think so. I'm watching him fight with Keiko. I'm not going like, boy, this guy's a badass. Yeah, no.
He ends the show going off to be an instructor at Starfleet Academy. He's like, what a badass.
No.
Okay. You'd at least give me this, that he's had some badass episodes. Not just moments, but entire episodes where he's a total badass.
Definitely.
Okay. I buy your argument so much. Any other DS9 badasses that you want to highlight? Or are we just going to devote the next 20 minutes to Jake Sisko?
Well, I mean,
and his Jumja sticks
and Vedic Brow. Don't forget Vedic Brow. No, you know, the only one, and I don't think this character is necessarily a badass because he's a villain, and that's Gul Dukat. But I do think he was kind of a badass when he had his Klingon bird of prey.
I'll say this. It goes back to what I was saying earlier about like, if you're kind of a badass, you're being championed by, say, the creators, the storytellers. Yes. Gul Dukat's a vile, like, pile of pus.
Yes.
And that's why he cannot be a badass. He totally had moments, like...
When he had that Klingon bird of prey. Where it was suddenly like, okay, we're going to kind of make him cool for a season.
For a season, yes.
Yes, yes. But literally on my notes, it says Dukat with Klingon bird of prey. It does not say Dukat, period.
But, I mean, there are some cool moments strewn throughout the series, even when he was that vile little toad.
Yeah, even in, I think it's the Maquis, I think, when they're trying to, like, break through, and he goes over the communication system and basically just, like, shuts down Sisko. Like, Sisko's just, like, watching him kind of in awe.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, he is...
But, Cam, in the next scene, his uniform comes undone while he's walking out of the airlock.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, he kind of falls in that Joker category where he's like a villain who has amazingly badass moments, but you're not really comfortable saying, man, he's a badass. I'd like to be like him.
Can we say this? I don't, as much as I like the journey and the arc of Juan Damar, I would never call him a badass.
No.
And Wei Yun, he's such a little toad.
Yeah.
As much as I love the performance, I would never call him a badass, though.
Of the Ferengis, who's the closest?
I would say Nog.
I think probably because, you know, you just see Nog is so kind of cool-headed in battle and things like that. He's a character who's definitely gets that sort of confidence. Like, Quark is all over the place.
Yes.
He's kind of a mess. Rom is someone who I think...
There's no way you could ever make an argument for Rom being a badass.
No, he's always getting kind of pushed around by...
No. Someone who talks like that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's always just getting kind of pushed around by his brother. I think he's a, you know, cool guy for giving his son a better life, but Rom doesn't get the moments.
I'm just intrigued by, you know, what if we got to see DS9 season 8 and it's been like 20 years, and what is like Commander Nog like versus the Nog that we met in episode 1 where he's stealing Odo's bucket.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like he may have had a lot of moments that were certainly not badass throughout like the course of the series, but he's definitely a character I think could like evolve into that kind of cool operator sort of thing. And the reason that that's even cooler is because you just would not expect that from a Ferengi either.
Right.
Okay. I think maybe that does it for our DS9 entries, unless there's anyone big I'm forgetting that you think is worth bringing up here, sir?
No. I mean, we didn't really touch on Shikara, but I guess we could move on.
Okay. No, we're saving an entire episode. Yeah. He's going to be on part 2. but why don't we go over to Voyager? And I don't know if you want to start out this one, because there's one particular character and one particular episode that totally sold it for me. But why don't you kick it off, just in case I'm hogging up too much the airwaves here.
Oh, this is a tough one, because, you know, again, like I was looking at Janeway, because, you know, you look at episodes like Year of Hell. She has, you know, her big time's up moment.
Say it in the Janeway voice, Cam.
Time's up.
Nice.
We see her in like Equinox, where she's just so tough opposite, you know, Rudy Ransom.
Well, to me, this is the character that I was alluding to.
Yeah.
And to me, it was, I think season two or season three episode Macrocosm.
Yes.
Where
great episode. Yeah.
All out Ellen Ripley there.
Yes.
And I was just in awe. It's like, oh, wow, this is like a total badass character.
She's a little more inconsistent than a Sisko or a Picard.
Well, and that's what Kate Mulgrew even had to acknowledge in her performance. She said this at conventions, but essentially she was written very inconsistently, so she played it as if she was a character suffering from PTSD, struggling to get her crew back home. And so that's the way that she was able to rationalize it in her own performance. Would you call Janeway a badass? You know, I would say there's a more of an argument for her than, say, Picard.
Yeah.
You know, maybe even Kirk, just with the hours spent in. She did not get those kinds of silly moments that Kirk had. There, like, Janeway was never portrayed as silly, ever.
Well, maybe Fairhaven.
Well, but she definitely inconsistent.
Oh, what about Concerning Flight?
I don't know about you, but I think it's pretty badass if you go on a journey with a holographic Leonardo da Vinci.
That's true. On a bicycle.
On a bicycle.
Flying bicycle at that.
It was a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang prequel. Anyway, is Janeway a badass?
I don't know. Yeah. I think she's a character who has badass moments. Like, I think she might be kind of like a Riker, where you have some really great moments.
What does it add up to?
Yeah, I mean, okay, here's the thing that is the one thing that I think really Janeway has that these other captains don't have is that you look at what her mission was, which was to get her people home, and she kind of did that, at any cost, often at great sacrifice. And so...
rest in peace, Admiral Janeway.
Yeah, I mean, she was willing to kind of put it all on the line herself to get her people home. And we never saw those other captains in that brutal situation. Sisko probably comes the closest.
Yeah.
But we are saying Sisko's a badass. What makes Sisko a badass do you think that Janeway kind of suffers from?
I think it's the consistency with which the character is written.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only reason why I hesitate saying all out that she is a badass. I just think... I would feel lame if I did not come away with this saying... Janeway's a badass, though. It's just like, if you see everything she's accomplished, see some of her greatest hits, it's just like, wow, that character really is badass. Tough as nails.
Yeah.
Would you not want her to be your captain? Like, with, you'd be assured that...
Oh, I rank Janeway very highly on my ranking the captain's picks.
But is she following the... Let me see what other definitions there are of badass here in Urban Dictionary.
We're struggling to try and make Janeway a badass.
Maybe we can find like a good fit for her.
Maybe what we could do also is look at the other cast members and decide who's the biggest badass of the crew. Because Voyager is short on real candidates. I feel like the only other one that might apply is Seven of Nine.
Yeah, she's on my list. Here, before we jump on to that, though.
Yeah.
A badass does not make enemies or go looking for fights. They do not fight fights that aren't worth fighting either.
Okay.
I'm just reading.
I don't know if that helps me.
No, I'm just randomly reading things. Here you go. A badass is not a jerk. A badass does not prey on the weak and shows kindness in return to those who are kind.
So Rudy Ransom is not a badass. Got that.
A badass stays true to themselves always. This means being themselves for themselves and not being fake to impress others.
Well, that's definitely... Janeway doesn't do that.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. And if I have to champion one character from Voyager as badass, I would say it's Janeway. Because maybe we can segue over to Seven of Nine here.
Yeah.
Because I looked at Seven and you'd say, oh yeah, it's an obvious candidate, kind of the cool operator.
Yeah, well, I mean, we referenced Tsunkatsi on our video we did on Star Trek Fights. But... I also think of like the episode Prey, where she's like hunting that species 8472. And I mean, she's tough.
Yes.
And you can see how her character would be someone that would be so formidable, but also has that cool kind of aloof attitude that isn't really trying to ever change for the sake of what other people want, which I like.
Janeway had to reprimand her so many times for pulling that kind of the same stuff again and again.
Does that make her the most badass, at least in terms of presentation?
Well, she's definitely the most consistent out of all the, if it's Janeway versus Seven of Nine.
Yeah. It's tough, right?
Yeah. But one of the moments, like I was digging up trying to find moments and examples. And do you remember in Message in a Bottle where they encountered the Hirogen on the view screen?
Yeah.
And she sends back an electrical surge to like knock him out?
Yes.
That's a pretty badass moment.
Yeah.
I was watching the clip on YouTube just not too long ago, Cam. And B'Elanna's reaction was amazing. She's like, "You killed him?"
Yeah.
"He got electrocuted. He'll be okay." That's badass to me.
It's a bummer that the half-Klingon character on the show isn't one of the badasses.
Okay, so I think people could make valid arguments for both Janeway and Seven of Nine.
Mm-hmm.
Any other character on the entirety of Voyager that could be described as a badass?
One character who should have been, who isn't, is Tuvok.
I was thinking Tuvok.
Because, you know, you look at Spock, the way the show relies on him is sort of the closer. You know, in a fight, you send in Spock, the fight is ending. Tuvok should have had a similar role, but we never got any of that, and he just seems kind of boring.
I think it hurts if you're often paired up with a guy who calls you Mr. Vulcan. Like, Mr. Vulcan is not the most badass nickname.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the best you can get.
Yeah. So, yeah, Neelix is not on my list.
Well, you said, you know, Tuvok was the most likely candidate, but I think Tom Paris and Chakotay were both supposed to be badass characters.
I'd say, yeah, maybe more Chakotay than Tom. Well, I don't know.
What happened to either one of those characters, though, Cam?
Well, Tom,
how come they're not in the discussion?
Tom Paris is plagued by all these like daddy issues, and when you're telling, you know, the viewers at home about your time crying in your bedroom as a child, you know, it's like, you know what? James Bond ain't doing that.
Ben Sisko's not doing that.
Yeah, Ben Sisko's not doing that. Chakotay is actually a real missed opportunity because that is a character who should have been.
He's a Maquis commander. He's
by definition. Look at the tattoo, for God's sake.
Yeah, yeah. He's got the Mike Tyson tattoo before it was even cool.
Mm-hmm.
But by definition, he's kind of a rebel, a resistance fighter. And he's the most buttoned down, like,
vanilla
sort of, like, got nothing going on sort of character. I'm just like,
the only times you really get the sense Chakotay is kind of cool is in like Scorpion, or I think Equinox, where he goes up against Janeway.
Yeah.
But in those situations, he's not like a badass. He's just got some backbone.
Yeah.
You know, we never see him as a man of action. He gives really strong opposing views to Janeway.
Yeah.
Which is great, but that's not really enough.
Okay. So Voyager, it's such a weird kind of...
Yeah.
It has
such a huge cast, too. It has like the biggest cast of any of the Trek series, and yet the fewest number of potential badasses.
Well, we've always joked that, you know, Voyager was like TNG light.
Yeah.
The fact that we're struggling with badass characters on Voyager, just as we did with TNG, maybe that's very indicative of part of the problem here. Why don't we hop on over to...
Actually, I had a supporting character from Voyager who I actually wanted to reference. And this is one that I want to talk to you
Q2?
About. Because this is a character we, I believe, referred to as a badass ourselves. But okay. I'd like to know if the character really applies. And that's Lon Suter, played by Brad Dourif, who we saw, of course, in Meld first, playing like a homicidal maniac, Betazoid, who was imprisoned on the ship. But then we see in Basics, Lon Suter goes from like a caged up mental patient to like stone cold killer who's like winning back the ship.
I would definitely say he's not badass.
You don't think badass?
No.
What about that episode though? He's
Basics?
Tortured. Yeah, you don't think Basics when he's kind of unleashed and taking back the ship?
No, I think that's again going back to kind of the moral complexity that people like Sisko are dealing with in episodes like For the Uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think For the Uniform is Sisko being badass. I think it's showing kind of a dark path that he's dealing with, and Lon Suter having to kill those Kazons.
But that's kind of him finding his way back for like the good of the crew.
That's not badass. You know? I would definitely say no to Lon Suter, even though I like him as a character. And I think he actually should have been a main character.
Right.
Far more interesting than, say, a Neelix. But,
to me, he was the closest the show has to like kind of like a Garak character. Right. Where, you know, it's someone who stands out from the rest because of more of sort of that darker streak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we hop on over to Enterprise? And I think this will be an easy one.
Sure. Mayweather.
Yeah. I'll just say this. Maybe you might make an argument for one of the main cast members. I would not describe any of the main cast members as badasses.
There's one who should have been, and that's Reed. Because, you know, you have the conflict between him and Major Hayes during the Zindi arc. And, you know, they have the scene of course, Hayes fighting Reed, and Reed ultimately wins the respect and is kind of leading these tactical teams. Reed should have been a badass, but the two seasons leading up to that didn't exactly establish that character as...
No, you bring up season three, which has Archer given some moments.
Yeah.
But a lot of it's like kind of the moral compromise that I was talking about. There, especially that episode, I think it was called Damage, where we had Casey Biggs guest starring as that alien captain that they steal from.
Yeah.
And that's not Archer being a badass, like, yeah, I steal from the needy. It's more like, oh, look how compromised this character is. So he had a lot of moments in season three, but I don't think that makes him a badass captain to any degree.
I mean, outrunning fire in the episode Zero Hour should have gotten him the title, but no, it doesn't.
Yeah. Would you make an argument for one Shran?
Yeah, Shran is on my list.
We actually described him as the kind of the closest thing that Star Trek has to a James Bond sort of character.
Yeah.
I think he just kind of shows up, pops up in those kind of badass moments. He gets a lot of hero shots, and he's also that very morally kind of complex sort of character as well. Remember when he's torturing Soval?
Yeah.
And you can tell he's tortured to torture his captive there,
yes.
And which I find fascinating. But I wouldn't describe a guy who's like, I wouldn't describe the torture itself as badass, though.
Right.
But it just kind of adds to that complexity of the character.
When he does, again, like a lot of these great badass characters, he kind of walks the line between good and bad. Like, you're never quite sure where he stands. And when he's on your side, he's formidable. Like, he's the guy you want in your corner.
Yeah.
You know, and I think of, like, you know, him swooping in to save the day in, like, Zero Hour in his ship. And you're just like, yes, like, here comes. He really does get the Han Solo at the end of Star Wars moment, like, swooping in to save them. That's when you know that this, they know this character is kind of a badass.
Yeah.
The only thing that makes him not a badass to me is having his antenna cut off by Archer.
That was probably his most emasculating moment throughout his entire run.
It was very humbling.
There's really no one else that pops up to me when it comes to Enterprise. At least no significant characters.
Empress Hoshi in
in
the Mirror Universe two-parter.
But I'll say this: if we're doing Mirror Universe, like, could you make the argument for other
Mirror Universe Kirk? Definitely,
sure.
Screaming like a barbarian.
I give it to Empress Hoshi.
Yeah.
What about this? I'm just thinking aloud here. What if we ever got a Mirror Universe episode of Discovery? You and I were not really following spoilers or anything like that, so
right.
This is hypothetical. But what if they brought back a cryogenically frozen, like, Linda Park as Empress Hoshi? Would you be down for that?
I would love it. Do you think they would ever do that?
I don't think so, but I would love it, though.
I would love it.
It bring some sort of continuity.
I would love it if Hoshi was the first character they brought back from a different series with the original actor.
Sure.
Because obviously we have Harry Mudd already. But I mean, if they actually brought back...
We got Sarek, too.
Yeah, true. But if they actually brought Linda Park as the first returning actor back to Star Trek,
that
would be
amazing. CBS All Access subscriptions would just, like, skyrocket. People are like, well, I'm missing out on what?
You know that the commercial for the next episode, that would be all it's about coming next week. Linda Park is back.
Yeah. Okay. It would still be amazing to watch, though, as a fan.
Oh, definitely.
Because Empress Hoshi, I think Empress Hoshi, yes, total badass.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people mourn the lack of a season 5 of Enterprise. I think the great lost opportunity wasn't having Shran on the ship. I think it was following up the Empress Hoshi story.
Yeah.
I think that could have been really, really great stuff.
Maybe we'll get it on Star Trek Discovery somehow. I don't know.
I feel like they're more likely to have some sort of reference to the Empress.
Sure.
There's not gonna be a Hoshi, just the Empress.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or be Empress Sato?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Or no, is it? Yeah, yeah. Okay. Why don't we skip on over to Discovery, man?
Right.
I would make an argument, and we may disagree.
Yeah.
But there's only one character here that I think is unequivocally badass and was meant to be that way. And keyword here, meant to be badass. And I think that's Michael Burnham. Do you think there are more than one, like, main characters?
I think...
We can talk about other, like, supporting characters, but main characters that are badass.
I don't...
Well, what I'm getting is I think a lot of people are going to be arguing for Lorca. And
yeah.
I think the problem with Lorca, and I think what a lot of people are misinterpreting Lorca as if they are celebrating, as if the writers are celebrating the questionable actions of this character, which
They
are not. And yeah. It's very clear that they are not, but I think a lot of people are taking issue with that. Maybe they're just not interpreting this character correctly. So I think the fact that you're seeing him do like a lot of, I don't know, badass moments where he's saying fire on the cloak
ship. Yeah, that was a good one. And there's another one in an earlier episode where he's like kind of doing this like orchestrating chaos. Like he's kind of using his hands and he's standing in front of the view screen as he's destroying Klingon ships. And he's just like kind of doing like this like conductor type thing as they're like firing on them. And it's like, that is really cool.
I think that was the mining episode. What was that one?
Was it the mining one?
I think it was Conscience of a King.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, because that's when they left the...
Context is for Kings.
It was later in the run.
I think it was that episode where they were trying to save that ship or something. The one that they failed to save.
The Gagarin.
Yeah.
It's named after like the first Russian cosmonaut or something
right.
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I should know my space history
obviously,
better.
Yeah.
He was orchestrating that.
Well, like he's has his hands up in the air and he's like doing like a conductor's type stance as they're like firing.
No, it was really did not work out because Reese couldn't figure out how to fire. So he's just kind of like Lorca's just standing there like, oh, yeah. Come on.
It was really awkward.
Yeah. Would you call Lorca a badass though?
No, he has moments.
He has moments, but he's not, and he's not supposed to be.
No, the show's setting him up as too much of a train wreck.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. What about Burnham? Would you agree that Burnham is the badass of the show?
I guess so. Because I don't think there's another candidate. I think she stands out the most as one, especially with that fight scene with Cole at the into the forest they go.
Why? I guess to me this is like a no-brainer. But yeah. You seem to be kind of struggling. What is making you hesitate with regards to Burnham as a badass?
I think it has something to do with the fact that like Burnham's always questioning herself to a big degree. The thing about Discovery is each of these characters are being given way more sort of depth and transformation episode to episode than the other series ever did. So you could kind of hammer down a character as a badass, whereas like Discovery tends to change week to week. You know, we'll see an episode where like Burnham does something amazing, like Into the Forest I Go, but then there's an episode where she's kind of nervous or whatever the whole episode, or seems very ill at ease. And so they're more human characters, essentially.
Okay.
And most humans aren't badasses. Fictional characters tend to be more badasses.
Speak for yourself, Cam. Yeah.
And so, like, to me, when I think badass, I look more at the characters.
She's not necessarily a Wolverine to you?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I guess, but I do think of the
crew, she is the most, yes.
Within the nine episodes that we've seen, what we have seen is she's incredibly smart.
Yes.
Incredibly capable.
Yes.
Not always the best judgment.
Right.
Physically, you know.
Top notch, yeah.
Top notch.
Yeah.
It's all kind of the qualities of somebody who's badass. And I think, you know, that existential crisis, those existential crises that she's going through,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get that from a character like Wolverine or
sure.
Batman or even Han Solo as well.
Yeah.
So to me, I mean, you kind of line everything up and it all kind of spells out to me, yeah, this would be a character who is kind of the badass.
I've struggled with Discovery a lot because we're only nine episodes in. Like, you just don't know where these characters are going.
But I like the fact that we can now get Discovery into these weekly conversations that we're having on the podcast.
Yeah.
This is the first time we actually get to do it, which
I know,
is kind of
right?
fun now. Yeah.
Now, what are there any supporting characters on Discovery you would consider a badass?
Yeah, Volk.
Help me, Lorel. I don't know what to do. Is Lorel a badass?
I struggle with this one as well. My problem is Lorel... right now is still a complete enigma.
Yes.
A complete cipher. We don't know if she's making stupid decisions week to week or if this is all part of her grand Joker plan that
right.
we saw in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
You know? I would say I don't know. I don't think anybody can make a qualified decision at this point.
Yeah, I mean I feel the same way. To me, Lorel is tipping towards being a badass to me personally, but we haven't seen where this character is going.
I mean, she's got like elements where like they get her a cool scar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's, oh, definitely.
That sort of stuff.
What about Cole?
No.
You don't think Cole is kind of a badass? He's wearing a cape.
He looks cool.
Yeah.
We had fun with him in the last episode.
Yeah.
But leading up to that, it was kind of like, eh.
But once he started picking his teeth with Georgiou's...
That was a badass moment.
Yeah.
But for the most part, he kind of came off as like a bit of a prick.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't necessarily use the word badass to describe him.
No.
Leading up to that. And
no.
Also, let's be honest. He's a big-ass Klingon warrior.
Yeah.
And he got his ass handed to him by like this 5'5", like human.
But okay, now here's the question. Who would have won that fight?
If because it continued all the way to the end?
Yes, because she
took
Cole, the Cole, different way out. She
tricked
him.
Cole would have won.
Yes.
But, you know, yeah. I'm just saying, but yeah. He took far more slashes than you'd think a Klingon warrior would against a very diminutive human.
But maybe that's why, because she is quite small. Like, it would be tough. He's big. He's a big, clunky guy.
Sure.
And she could move a lot faster than he could. So it actually makes sense to me that she'd be able to get some hits in.
Kevin, let me ask you this. Do you think Cole is a badass?
I don't know.
I would say absolutely not.
Leading up to Into the Forest I Go, I would have said no. And then after that episode, I'm like, Cole may be the greatest character in the history of Star Trek. You have no idea how much I was won over by the picking his teeth with the comm badge.
That was an amazing moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just fun fact for all you viewers out there. So the episode actually replayed in the middle of the afternoon on Sunday, in the most recent week here in Canada.
Oh, and okay.
You seem shocked and in utter dismay at the fact that they would have reruns.
No, I didn't realize they were rerunning this show.
Well, every week, like right before the new episode airs, they air the previous week's episode.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So they're just continuing along with that. So okay. 3 in the afternoon Pacific time, which would have been like 6 o'clock Eastern time. Like I was just, the TV was on in the afternoon on a Sunday and I was like, okay. And I came in during that fight sequence. And I was like, and by then I was just like, okay, I'll just watch the rest of the episode. Interesting fact, Canada, the only place where we're getting like Star Trek Discovery on like actual like TV, like over the air, sort of like traditional broadcasting services. They blurred out the Klingon nudity in this airing, which was interesting because when you and I watched it last week, it was not blurred out. Although we were watching it a little, just I think about 2 hours later on in the afternoon.
Right.
It was just interesting to me that's like this would literally be the only place where they would censor the Klingon nudity, which I was just like, huh. The other fascinating part is, like, it's a bodysuit. It's not even real nudity.
I know, right?
So.
That's it. Why do you, is it just because it was in the afternoon that they blurred
it? I guess so.
Do you think they got complaints?
Maybe.
I mean, it's possible.
I don't want my children looking at
at fake nudity.
Like fake nudity.
Yeah. The rest of this episode is fine for my children.
Yeah, all the violence and everything. Yeah, I know, yeah. Fine.
Yeah. That's weird. Huh. Yeah. Interesting trivia note, I guess.
There you go. Cam, any closing thoughts on badasses in Star Trek?
I don't think so. I think we pretty much wrapped them up. I guess we should get to the Ortonville report.
Oh, yeah. This latest episode, I think, was called Firestorm. Cam, if you ever want to picture like an ode to where silence has lease.
Oh, yes.
This is what we got.
Did it have a character like Nagillum?
Kind of, sort of, not really.
Yeah.
No, not so much.
Nah,
but
it,
this felt very much like where silence has lease mixed with Message in a Bottle.
Okay.
To me, I actually think this is probably maybe the third or fourth best episode they did, even though I found it very predictable. And the end of the episode was just nothing but exposition. Could you imagine 5 minutes straight of every single character all sitting in a room together and explaining every single thing that just happened so that viewers would not walk away confused, even though I thought it was very obvious what was going on? It was, right. it was painful to sit through. Like, I was just like, oh, okay.
It's always interesting to me when I watch, you know, a movie or TV series that isn't necessarily the brightest, but is overloaded with exposition because they are so, so concerned that the audience will not be able to follow.
Yeah.
And it gets to the point where you're like, why are they telling me so much to the point where I don't even understand what they're talking about anymore? I've seen that multiple times, you know. In fact, we kind of saw a little bit of that in Justice League the other day.
You know, where that's a big chunk of the movie.
Yeah,
just where it's like saying exactly what's happening.
It's an incredibly simple movie. And yet, characters just kept explaining things over and over and over. It was just strange.
Well, the old joke is, you know, the bad script is where the characters are explaining what just happened, and then they're explaining what's happening, and then they're explaining what's going to happen.
Yeah,
and it's just kind of like, and that's kind of what it feels like watching the Orville.
Who wrote this episode?
It was a name that I didn't recognize, but it was not a It was not a Seth MacFarlane written episode. Brandon Braga directed this one.
Okay.
And Robert Picardo had a small role on the view screen. He played this episode focused on Alara, the security chief, and he played her father.
Oh, okay.
And apparently, like, they come from a society that values intelligence above everything else, and she's considered like a real stupid person, and that's why she ended up in the Union military or whatever.
Okay.
And she was explained to her family's like
so she's like the Alexander of the family,
kind of. Yeah, okay. You know, the outcast sort of.
Right.
And she was explaining, well, the humans value a military career, and then Picardo's character is just like, they're the hillbillies of the galaxy, which I kind of like that line. But again, this isn't really a show that I find all that funny, but every maybe once an episode there's at least like one line that at least makes me smile. But I mean, like I said, it was an okay episode. I think what I'll say is I think the last 3 out of 4 episodes were far more consistent.
Right.
There's one absolute stinker that was Majority Rule, which it was all about, it was kind of a morality play about social media.
Right.
Which was just an awful stinker. But I think they're getting more consistent, figuring out what works, what doesn't work. It's still a show I struggle to sit through every week. And I was questioning this about like whether anybody's getting much value out of me. I'm either complaining about a show that they really like.
Yeah.
Or else I'm talking about a show that they're not watching.
Right.
I've explained before, I'm doing this because it's obviously such a big homage to Star Trek, and there's a lot of Star Trek talent behind it. So it's mostly out of curiosity.
Yeah, you're tackling that. I'm tackling the books, the Discovery novels.
Desperate Hours and something measures? Extreme measures?
Drastic Measures.
Drastic Measures?
Yeah.
Okay.
That one's in February.
Yeah. So on that note, though, we did get viewer mail.
Addressing the Orville and the Ortonville.
Addressing the Ortonville report. Yeah. So this actually comes from a friend of the podcast, one Keith Goralchak. We actually met him when we were in the convention last year.
Right.
He was actually staying like in our hallway in the hotel, which is like
in
funny.
In the room right next door.
Yeah, it was funny because like we were walking down the hall and like we encountered him, and then we were like chatting and then walking down the hall and walking down the hall. And then we realized, oh, we're staying like right next door. It's like, it was just kind of like a funny moment. And then I ran into him in the hall again. I felt bad because like, we're like, hey, listeners, come on out. We'll get you drinks. And then we never hung out with Keith, but he was a cool cat to hang out with. But he did write in with some thoughts about the Ortonville report.
Yes. So Keith had an email that says, in defense of the Orville. Says, hi guys, I'm still loving the podcast, and I know it's a Star Trek podcast, but I just wanted to write in and give some love to the Orville. I actually really like it a lot. Sure, it's not perfect, and at first I agreed with many of the reviews that said it didn't know what type of show it wanted to be. But it took a while for TNG and DS9 to find their own voice and tone, and I think the Orville has gotten better week after week. My favorite episodes so far have been funny enough, the episodes Tyler has hated the most, About a Girl and Majority Rules. Most importantly, when I watch it, it feels like TNG and DS9. It has that comfortable, familiar feeling, and it's a great diversion from all the dark sci-fi that seems to be more the norm these days. I am loving Discovery too, but I think one of the things it's missing is the camaraderie and sense of family that the other Treks have had. I get the sense that the Orville's senior staff has each other's backs and would do anything for them. You don't get the sense that the Discovery crew fully trusts each other, and while the conflict makes for interesting TV, it does also make things really dark. I'm really happy the Orville got picked up for a second season, because it's going to be given the opportunity to grow and develop even more, and it's a really nice counterpart to Discovery, and I'm loving that both shows are doing well, because that means more sci-fi on TV. Keep up the great work, and I look forward to disagreeing with Tyler about the Orville in the future. LOL.
I do agree with Keith, though. It's like the more sci-fi there is on TV that's doing well, I think that's better for, you know, just sci-fi fandom in general. And
yeah,
I mean, while the Orville, I'm not going to go out and say like it's bad if you like the show. It's just, I've said it before, it's just not a show for me, but I think it's good that it's actually been successful so far.
I think it's going to be really curious to see what happens when Paul Scheer gets his Galaxy Quest TV show going.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what is a world where you have the Orville on TV as well as a Galaxy Quest TV show like? Because...
streaming.
Yeah, it's on Amazon, right?
Yeah.
Amazon is doing it? Yeah. So, I mean, that's going to be really interesting to see how they differentiate between the two.
You know what? Everybody thought the Orville was going to be like Galaxy Quest.
Right.
And it did not turn out to be.
Right.
And I've been listening to, or I was reading an interview excerpt that Scheer did, and a lot of what he was saying actually made me feel he was saying the right things, and that like they don't want to just do an all-out reboot. They mm-hmm. want to kind of honor it without making it just redundant or repetitive. Derivative. So I'm intrigued by what we get from Galaxy Quest, the Amazon streaming series.
Yeah.
What that means for the Orville, I don't know. Maybe more fans will be like, this is more for me than the Orville is. And right. they'll go with that. Look, Star Trek fandom loves Galaxy Quest. And I think that's a movie over the last 20 years. It's just become like this kind of cult classic. So
it's really funny. We had this huge dearth of like Star Trek on TV for like a decade. It didn't even seem like CBS cared about Star Trek at all.
No.
Even like when they announced Discovery, we were kind of like, really? Like they actually care enough to make another series?
Yeah.
And then, like, this launches, Orville launches, and it's now you have all this, you know, Star Trek on TV and all these shows inspired by Star Trek coming to TV and streaming.
There are rumors that CBS All Access is actually working on, like, another Star Trek-related spinoff.
Well, there was a rumor that Nicholas Meyer was working on, like, a Khan limited series.
Yeah.
There's been no news about that since that initial sort of rumor popped up.
But what else are they going to say, though? Like,
right. But there's no news of, like, an announcement or anything. You know,
no, but I think at this point, like, it's only been, like, maybe 2 months or something.
Yeah.
He would still be in, like, the script stages and all that. I the fact that we haven't heard anything, that doesn't surprise me at all. So
no, but it is interesting that we went from Star Trek really being ignored and mistreated by CBS, and now they're like, more Star Trek.
Yeah.
Well, I can't complain. It helps this podcast. Okay, so I think...
All the money we're making off of this, Cam... To see the dough rolling in now.
I quit my job today, Tyler. Okay, so on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Let's continue the conversation over at Facebook. Join our Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. There's links up there now to our recent Discovery blogs. Tyler, what did you write about last week?
Yeah, I took a look at Into the Forest I Go versus another fan favorite episode, Zero Hour from Enterprise. And I was really doing a discussion all about the badass moments in Star Trek and what really makes something badass. And we talked about it in depth on the previous podcast, but it's all about, I think, having emotional stakes involved with what the characters are going through. And that's when you really do earn those badass moments. But I go into far more depth. And there's this hilarious YouTube clip that I dug up from Star Trek Voyager that to me is just worth clicking on the blog right there.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and for my blog, I took a look at, speaking of badass, at Bill Pullman. I looked at the big Bill Pullman speech from Independence Day and compared it to Lorca's big speech, you know, hyping up the Discovery crew before they went to battle against the Klingons. And then also some of the other sort of fun parallels between Independence Day and that and Into the Forest I Go. As well as I took a moment, too, just to underline an interesting Star Wars parallel that maybe you guys didn't notice as much that I thought was pretty fun.
I thought that was pretty cool. So yeah, it's worth digging into, readers.
Yeah. Okay, so Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Well, we are going to tackle a topic that we've actually discussed for a little while, Cam, and then the Discovery got in the way.
It
inserted itself here, but these are... the lingering questions of Star Trek. A lot of mysterious kind of items that maybe didn't get full answers. There's other things that just kind of the untold stories that are out there, you know, like, I don't know, what was Geordi doing in between Generations and First Contact? I know a lot of people want to know about getting rid of the visor, you know, just those kinds of funny sort of things you don't usually think about.
Yeah, and for, great episodes like, the Dominion War, which wraps up everything. Certain threads got lost along the way that were like, hey, what happened with that?
And what happens after the Dominion War?
Yeah. So I think it's going to be really fun to tackle some of the unknown mysteries that were just created by these series.
What happens after the incredibly disappointing endgame where Voyager gets home and we just see fireworks and it's just like, okay.
Wait, wasn't that enough for you?
No.
Well, we know Janeway became an admiral, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully we can kind of have some goofing around with that one a bit, too. Okay, you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam. V is in Vorik. Is Voyager's true badass, Smith?
Wow. You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N. N is in Nerys, as in the intendant. How come we did not bring her up as a badass, Cam?
Every Mirror Universe character is awesome.
That's pretty true.
Okay. So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.